Doc tapped his shoes with the ebony stick.
We used boot leather, my good sir. The essence of primordial locomotion.
Come again.
Ryan drew and fired the Sig Sauer, the blaster only a blur. Before Sterling could react, a sticky dropped from the underside of a theater marquee. It hit the cracked sidewalk and sluggishly started to rise again. Both the companions and the segment cut loose with their weapons in unison. The humanoid creature was torn apart by the fusillade. Sterling started the process of purging and reloading his black powder revolver.
Tricky bastards. If only we could find their nest, we'd ace them all in one shot.
The stickies have a nest?
Bet your ass they do, and it's well hidden. We've searched for years and never found their nest, and it's gotta be a big one. We have more stickies than scorpions, and we got a lot of scorpions.
The cry came from the top of the wag, and something went flying over the roof. The object landed on the sandy street. The sucker-covered fingers twitching grotesquely a few times before the hand went still.
She did it!
The lieutenant's face was a mixture of delight and astonishment.
The lady healer did it! Cut the suckers off! Easy as peeling back a scab!
He's going to live?
Hell yeah!
Mildred stood into view, wiping the ooze and blood from her hands with a cloth. A couple of the men on top of the war wag started offering hearty congratulations to the physician with beefy handshakes, until it almost seemed like they were shaking the woman to death.
Son of a bitch! She saved him! The Baron is going to throw a party when he hears about this!
Why is that?
Daniel is his son! The boy's a bastard, sure enough, but still the only son he's got, and heir to the Ville.
And your Baron sends him out to fight stickies?
Well, sure. Why not?
Good thing, too. Nobody wants a Baron who faints at the first sight of blood.
Radiating suppressed fury, Sterling gave the man a hard look, and he immediately went quiet. The companions noted the incident, and naturally assumed there was some sort of trouble in the Baron's family. As the son of a Baron himself, Ryan could understand that problem better than most. Sometimes Mildred and Doc talked about democracy, the Republic, Congress, Parliament, and other such pre-Dark things. But these days, only the strong ruled, and their successors were normally chosen at the end of a working gun, and not by the will of the people. Smart was good, but a Baron had to be strong for the sake of his Ville. Mildred pushed back the gang of joyous Sekhmen.
Enough already!
All right, knock it off!
Rubbing her stinging shoulders, Mildred gathered the med supplies and started down into the lower level of the bus. A blonde Sekhman came over to address the companions.
It was mighty good shooting there, Wrist. You're faster than even the Baron with that fancy blaster.
The name's Ryan, not Wrist. Unless you want to breathe dirt, Stoop, you'll be triple wise to remember it.
The man bridled at that, but when he met the gaze of the Deathlands warrior, he hunched his shoulders and moved deeper into the crowd.
Pay no attention to Porter. He's young and got a big mouth, but he don't mean no trouble.
I do.
The discussion was over. A few moments later, Mildred hopped out of the vehicle and rejoined the companions. Oddly, her face was a somber study. She didn't feel like celebrating in the least. 10 people had died in less than an hour on the street, and she had only been able to save the life of one. She felt physically tired and emotionally exhausted. Sterling pointed at some of the Sekhmen.
You, and you! Clear the dead muties off the wag and get ready to roll.
Hefting their axes, the Sekhmen got busy chopping.
Where's your Ville? Maybe an oasis somewhere in the dunes?
Not far. Walking distance.
Keeping a straight face, Ryan said nothing at that. He had the feeling the Ville would have been described as being walking distance away if it was on the other side of the continent. The Tucsonville Sekhmen might allow a strange healer into their war wag to save a friend, but no bunch of armed outlanders was going to stroll into their Ville unannounced.
All done, Chief. Stickies are a lot more cooperative when they're in pieces.
You got that right.
Sterling scanned the war wag. It was streaked with gore and burned black in spots, but there didn't seem to be any serious damage to the machine. Just to his troops.
Gil, front and center.
Sterling looked around until he spotted a middle-aged man.
Sir?
The man's uniform carried the marks of a corporal. He was holding a crossbow, and there was a large quiver slung across his back. Only 2 arrows remained.
You're the new driver. Get the metro moving. Stay out of the shadows.
Me? Yes, sir.
Ambling into the bus, the fellow stored away his crossbow, then got into the driver's seat and started to work the controls. The engine misfired a few times. Frowning in consternation, the corporal fiddled with something on the dashboard controls. In rough order, the rest of the SecMen climbed on board the bus. Only four stayed on the street with their Sec Chief, but Ryan saw that they all carried blasters. Suddenly, the heavy engine of the Warwag rumbled into life. Bursting into a triumphant grin, Corporal Gill shifted gears, and the mammoth machine started to roll along the pre-dark street. Sterling walked alongside the slowly traveling wag.
Okay, move out! Lieutenant, make sure the catapult is ready for action. Everybody else stay razor sharp until we're behind stone. I'm not losing any more Sec men today.
Which did not include them, Ryan mentally noted, sharing a look with Christy. She nodded in understanding. With the spiked tires digging into the loose sand, the Metro began to move smoothly along the pre-dark street, with Sterling and his escort at the side, and the companions right behind. Notching fresh arrows into their crossbows, the guards on top of the Warwag rocked to the jerking motion of the machine as they studiously watched the shadows and rooftops for any suspicious movements. Under his breath, Doc muttered something in Latin, and Mildred hushed the scholar. Friendly didn't make the SecMen friends. Staying alongside the rumbling wag so they could have a good view of what was ahead, Ryan and the companions easily kept pace with the lumbering vehicle.
Sterling, when your man Porter called me Wrist, that's some lingo of yours, isn't it?
Huh? Yeah. It means outlet.
Even while talking, Sterling's eyes moved on a regular sweep back and forth among the pre-dark buildings, endlessly searching for enemies.
It's an old word from before Skydog.
Wrist.
Doc mulled it over as he started to clean the Lama. Could the root of the word possibly be tourist? When Skydark hit, the people of Tucson would have banded together, family with family. The Outlanders would have been the folks without kin, those just visiting the town. The tourists. Now it had become a derogatory word for stranger.
Tourist. So much for the legend of Southern hospitality.
Mildred pulled out a handkerchief to mop the sweat off her neck.
This is the West, not the South. Besides, who could possibly be called a tourist anymore?
After a few minutes, Doc closed the cylinder and holstered his gun.
Indeed, madam. I stand corrected. We are all outlanders now, strangers in a strange land.
You're dead right.
JB took out a butane lighter. He applied the flame to the end of the cigar stub in his mouth, puffing it cherry red, and exhaled a long, rich stream. A nearby SecMan sniffed at the pungent fumes.
Hey, got another one of those? I'll trade you fair for it.
Sorry, last one.
JB caught Mildred trying to hide her usual disapproving expression.
Oh, what the hell? You want this one?
He held out the smoldering stub.
Thanks!
The SecMan grinned and took the stub to start puffing away contentedly.
Nuke me. It's been a long time since I tasted tobacco. What do you want to trade? Got a good knife and some honeycomb?
A comb will do fine.
Deal.
Angling around two more corners, Corporal Gill shifted gears until the wag reached a section of street that was relatively clear of sand. The potholes in the asphalt were poorly patched in some spots, but much better in others, which seemed to indicate a learning process. The locals were doing repairs on the ruined city. This was something the companions had never encountered before in all of their travels. Just who was the Baron here? Reaching relatively smooth pavement, the wag picked up speed, while Sterling and the SecMen began to look noticeably less anxious.
We're close to their ville.
But they're not heading into the desert.
Removing a spare clip from his jacket pocket, Ryan then worked the bolt to eject the partially spent rotary clip, then inserted the fresh five-shot cluster. Satisfied for the moment, Ryan glanced at the ruined downtown skyscraper, trying to guess their location from the sloped angle of the building.
We seem to be going deeper into Tucson.
Feel inside the ruins.
Never did like those.
Christy gently massaged her cheek to try to soothe her sore gums. From the mad brother and sister of Novaville to the red-headed monster in that nameless town they had nicknamed Zero City, villes inside ruins had always been trouble for the companions. When civilization fell, everybody smart fled the coming food riots. Only Phoebes and Crazy stayed behind, many of them turning into cannies. Was this why they were being greeted so warmly? They were being led to the cooking pot? Surreptitiously, Christy slipped a hand into her pants pocket and checked the grin. If worst came to worst, she'd take a lot of cannies with her before they tasted meat. The Metro turned at the next corner, and the companions now saw only a vast open space that stretched a good half mile. The concrete paths of ancient sidewalks were still in place, but the buildings that had been inside those cracked borders were gone, the smooth ground evenly packed with rubble and loose sand. This was a shatter zone, Ryan realized. An open field with no place for attackers to hide. There had to have been some rough fighting here once for the locals to do all of this work. In the midst of the wide expanse stood a formidable wall, the imposing barrier composed of everything imaginable. Concrete sidewalk slabs, marble cornerstones, bricks, cinder blocks, and rusty steel beams. The debris of a dozen buildings had been compiled to erect a massive fortification around a small section of the pre-dark city. Rising high behind the impressive shield were three old buildings, the glass in the windows just as milky white as those in the ruins, but a few of them flashed mirror bright. Ryan made a mental note on the location of those. That had to be the home of the Baron. Even from this distance, the companions could see guards walking along the top of the wall, and more of them standing on the roofs of the three buildings. The sick men on the wall appeared to be carrying crossbows, but the ones on the buildings held long blasters. Mildred noted with some satisfaction that women were also walking the wall. She was starting to like this new Baron more and more.
This is why the stores were cleaned out. A ville this size needs a lot of different stuff to keep working. Barracks, taverns, armory, stables.
Prisons, torture chambers, dungeons, slave pits.
Sucking on the sweet honey, JB had no response to that because it was often true. He passed around the remaining honeycomb to the rest of the companions. Everybody took a sticky piece until there was nothing remaining. As Corporal Gill steered the Metro across the broken field, Ryan noticed that there was a second wall set about 50 feet outside the main barrier. It was only about 3 feet tall and made of some sort of upright concrete.
I don't understand this. Those are K-rails, a kind of portable divider that repair crews used on highways during construction. But why are there two walls?
It's a buffer, set to break the charge of cold hearts on foot or to slow down a rushing war wag.
But they left a couple of gaps.
Chill zones. The sick men can concentrate all their blasters on the gaps when the outlanders rush through and cut them down in droves.
A killing field. That's a term I once read in the newspaper about a battlefield tactic used in the Civil War. Civil War. Bah! As if such a thing were possible.
Good design. Be a bitch to get out.
Do you think we're walking into a trap?
Christie cast a sideways glance at Sterling and his sec men. The men were smiling broadly now that they were within sight of the ville.
Don't think so. They've been wrong before.
Nodding at that, Christie surreptitiously checked the anti-personnel gun in her pants pocket. There was another in her bearskin coat and more in the backpack, but this was the only gun she could reach with any speed. She wasn't getting any feeling of danger from the sec men or the ville, but as Jack said, they had been wrong before. Shifting the weapons in their hands, the figures of the guards on the wall watched closely as the war wag and the companion slowly approached. Clearly visible behind the barrier were a couple of angled wooden beams festooned with ropes and baskets at the end.
Catapults, just like the small one on top of the wag.
That'd be my guess. And damn big ones, too. Right, Doc?
Good Lord, how should I know? I taught literature, not history. In my day, the Army of the Potomac used cannons, not siege engines.
What you talking about? Just ropes and weights. No engine.
A siege engine is another term for catapult. Actually, it means any large device used to forcibly enter a castle.
Phew!
What a bunch of muty shit, thought Jack. Pre-dark whitecoats were crazy, and that was all there was to it. The front gate of Tucsonville proved to be a double set of metal panels that rose almost to the top of the masonry wall, where a steel I-beam packed with adobe bricks bridged the sections. Rusty barbed wire covered the bridge, and there were a few scraps of cloth, along with what appeared to be scalps, fluttering in the breeze from amid the endless coils. The grim remnants of an obviously failed attempt to gain entry. A small door was set into the left side of the double panel, and for some unknown reason, a band of corrugated iron ran along the bottom. The two sections of the gate itself were covered with multiple sheets of steel, iron, tin, and aluminum, each riveted over the other in a crazy patchwork quilt pattern. Slowing their advance, Ryan and JB shared a glance. Those were obvious repairs done to the portal over the years. Tucsonville had seen some hard battles in the past, and there was no way of knowing if the present inhabitants had been the defenders or the invaders. Gil eased the wag to a rocking halt and sounded the horn. This was clearly a code of some kind, Ryan realized, tensing slightly. But what was the message? In response, a flap made of riveted steel fell forward to expose the car tires set along the bottom of the front gate. The right side of the gate started to swing outward, the inflated tire crunching on the loose pebbles covering the ground as they rolled along. The gate hit the wall, and the Metro rolled on through, the SecMen on top of the war wag having to duck behind the sandbags because the fit was so tight.